Hey, hi there. This is Gail. We're waiting for members to join, but in the meantime, John Wiss, is that you or is that John Siegfried? John's iPad?
That's me, Wiz, Gail.
Good. Yep, great. I thought it was. Thank you. And Robert's iPhone, who's that?
Robert, I'm just a member of the public.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Thank you. And, okay. And, Kyle, I see Andy's here, and he's going to help us with some of the proposals from the statewide summary.
Great.
So that's probably one of the first items we'll put on after we talk about other items. We'll put that one on the board. For discussion. I have it. I'm going to move that around on the agenda a little bit. So,
is there anything you want me to ready to put up on screen or no tonight?
Yeah, it would be the statewide proposal, the summary.
Okay.
Yeah, so that I think that's the first one. I'm looking at the list here. I'm thinking that's the first one we're probably going to do. So, yeah. The others are more information that we're going to defer. Okay. Shane's on, great. Ernie's is there. Deborah. And we're still waiting for more AC members to start. Hope everybody's doing well. And if there's anybody who does not have a copy of the agenda, just let us know and we'll shoot you over a copy.
So, Andy, I was rereading the advisory announcement. And yeah, I think I understood what you were saying the other day that stop using bait on my burbot lines after the 5th, as long as I'm on a tributary.
This is Christy, and then I have Virgil here as well.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks, Christy. Appreciate it. Hi, Virgil. Okay, go ahead with your question, Kyle. You were talking.
I think Andy was just starting to say something.
Oh, okay.
Sure, there's no bait allowed in the tributaries of the Tanana River, but bait is allowed in the Tanana.
Right. Yeah, I think most of the set lines have been right there off the boat launch on Chinapump. So I think that's technically still a tributary, so I'm either going to have to go further out onto the river or stop putting bait after the 5th or after the
4th. Yeah, that mouth of the Chena, most of the winter, that's the mouth of the Chena. In the summer, that's when the Tanana's rolling through there. I can check on some clarification with the troopers there, how they might interpret that. But, yeah, that's a difficult spot there.
Yeah. Kyle, before I forget, Chuck Derrick is having trouble with the password. He says it's not working. Can you help him out with that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'll give him a call.
Okay. And so, Andy, a follow-up question to that would be, what about the sloughs, like Pile Driver? Well, that's drained now, but sloughs like that.
Oh, yeah, Pile Driver sloughs not connected on the upper end to the Tanana, so it'd be its own, it'd be a tributary.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Gail, this is Christy. We had trouble with the passcode as well, so we had to join the meeting with that, the tiny URL link.
Okay.
Yeah, I have Virgil here, just so you guys know.
Yeah, no, thanks for that. And it's showing up with his name, but I'm wondering how many other members are going to have that problem, because I talked to a few of them just for the meeting, and they're not on yet. So hopefully Kyle will get that corrected. And so we're still waiting, folks, for a few more of the AC members before we get started. I'd like to give it another 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll get started. And in the meantime, just quickly, I see Eva's on, and Eva, you're in, John's on too, Liz. John had raised a question with me about that article, and Eva is working on it big time, so we're really looking forward to some discussion on that one. But since you're going to talk with the group on Thursday, but not this group, could you give us a brief rundown of your work at UAF on this food security issue?
Yeah, I started to research like agriculture and food sovereignty, food security, but also lived it my whole life, right?
Right.
And then, you know, looking at this stuff, we have some resources for agriculture. And so I was like, when I was doing my research, I was like, you know, there's only so much the university can teach, and we need to really be out here doing hands-on work. And so we started the fish camp in Nenana. And in 2021, I think the first year we couldn't fish, we were already bringing fish up. That year we got it from Kenai, and now we have a more stable connection out in Bristol Bay to bring in sockeye salmon. It's still pretty expensive, so we have to find, you know, a variety of ways to fund it. And then we're also getting into agriculture. And so we've been working with Calypso. This will be our third year of doing agriculture training for rural Alaskans.
That's so, so great.
Yeah, it is, because Calypso is a farm and ecology center out in Esther. You guys have probably have heard of them before. So they do a lot of cool stuff. It's small scale. They have sheep and goats, lots of produce. So we've been teaching people and also learning ourselves. And then with the state selling land for agriculture right by our village in Nenana, you know, we got in on it and bought some land. And so we'll be doing some trainings for people out there on our land as well.
Fabulous.
Yeah, I'm excited for that.
And did you know about the small farm stuff that's going on down in Ruby, right?
Mm-hmm. There's like a lot of villages have been working toward, like some of the villages are more advanced in, but it's nice to see everybody, especially after COVID, a lot more people started wanting to do the agriculture training.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Good. Well, thanks for that update. And I know it's generated a lot of conversation already, so appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay, so it is 6:08, and Kyle, I think other people might be having trouble because we don't have people on yet.
Yeah, sorry, I just got off the phone with Chuck. I've found the problem. I had a typo when I made the Zoom meeting. So the actual password is Farbanks without the I. So, but for anybody who's joining by phone, that shouldn't affect it. If you call in, there's no passcode requirement. And anyone who's clicking on the link that to start the meeting, that should just bring
you through. Could you send out a quick correction to our AC members, because there's a few of them that I know are traveling and they'll be calling in.
Sure. Yeah, well, again, for folks calling in, it won't affect it. There's no passcode requirement.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I'll send out a reminder.
This is Mike. Yeah, I just called in, and it's just if you don't have the passcode, it just says hit pound, and that hooks you right up.
Okay, good. All right. Okay, John, get your hand up.
Yeah, I just logged in with no problem, Gail.
Okay, good. Okay, well, that's great. All right. Well, I think we'll go ahead and start the meeting, and hopefully others will join us. I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. Very quickly, I just want to get an idea of who's on from the AC. John Wiz and Virgil and Mike Tinker, and who am I missing? Chuck Derrickson, good. Okay, so we have four members of the AC, and I'm expecting a few more. Mike Kramer is watching some trials that his daughter's going through on skiing, so we'll may join us. He's going to try to. And John Siegfried is traveling, and I think Mark will show up here soon, I hope. Okay, so we'll get started, and has everybody seen the agenda? And do you want to add anything or correct anything on the agenda? Okay, so if I can get unanimous consent for the agenda. Any objection? Just let me know right away.
Yeah, I want to add one thing, Gail. This is something. Yeah, I think we should talk, or we should make a submission to the Board of Fish, inform them that the forecast is for none of the Yukon River stocks to make the minimum escapement goal, and so we need to request the Board of Fish to make the Yukon River salmon stocks all stocks of management concern.
Okay, thank you, Virgil. And that would have to be, we could do that with a request. I think that's through the department, isn't it? Or does the board make that decision?
The board makes the decision.
Okay. So
the department is supposed to recommend it, but they only do that the year that the once every 3 years, and we are not going to, so we would end up going 3 years without that happening.
Okay, so that would basically have to be an ACR that we put up in August, is that correct?
No, not necessarily. I think we can do it right now, and it would be better to do it right now.
Okay, that's fine with me. I'm good with that. I just added that to the, on the end of the board stuff. So we'll have that conversation. Thank you, Virgil. All right. The minutes from the March 6th meeting were approved by the full AC on March 8th, so that's already done. And let's just jump into the Alaska Board of Fish action. I assume, did anybody listen into the hearing today, confirmation hearing for Stan Zuray? Anybody know what happened? I did not have a chance to listen in today, but we did send a letter in that we supported him, so that got posted to the Senate resources. So I am going to assume that he did fine with his confirmation hearing. I hope that's the case. Then we have three new board of fish appointments. And I'm going to talk about them very briefly. One of them is Jared Godfrey from Eagle River and Kodiak. And he is a returning board member. And then two new board members, Greg Svensson from Anchorage. I don't know him. He is a hunter and a fisherman, third generation Alaskan. He's a member of the Barker Ranch Board of Directors. And leads a sponsored duck hunts for combat veterans. That sounds pretty cool. And then Mike Wood from Talkeetna, he has a small commercial fishing operation in Upper Cook Inlet, and he is on the Matanuska Susitna Borough Fish and Wildlife Commission, and he's a chair, and he's the vice chair of the Upper Susitna AC. And he was one of the initiators of the Stand for Salmon initiative a number of years ago. He's very big on conservation issues. So those are the new board members that will be at the fall board meeting. The current members are still on there through this next special session. But the new board members will be seated for the work session the first time, I believe. Is that correct, Kyle?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, thank you. So great.
Yeah, Gail.
Go ahead, Chuck.
This is Chuck. Yeah. What's the deal with John Jensen? Will vacating the seat?
We don't know.
Okay.
That's a mystery that we're trying to get to find out. So if anybody has any insight on that, everybody's pretty tight-lipped about that. But John has been. Go ahead.
Gail, rumor on the street is it's health related.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of had heard that too, Mike. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, we've got those three new members, and we'll see how it goes in the fall. In the meantime, we're going to try to meet with them. So there's a few of us that we'll try to arrange the meetings with them, and also I think Mike Kramer's already trying to meet with Mike Woods. So great. All right. Then our next agenda item is I wanted to move this around a little bit. So if you can put the statewide meeting summary on, Kyle, then we can just get through that. Okay, there we are. All right, so this was the decision-making on the statewide meeting, and can you go down the list a little further? And anybody who wants to stop me on a proposal of interest to them, please holler because I cannot see hands up right now. But if you've got a question on anyone, there are a few proposals we will be talking about in depth. So just jump right in. Okay, so going down to the next page, all right, right there, on Proposal 155, allow a person using a spear gun or spear gun to take fish while swimming the water surface. And Andy Griska is here to help us explain that very quickly and what that really means, although we've gone through it before. Andy, do you want to speak to that?
Apologize. Took me a moment to get to the microphone. I got three pages up. Proposal 155 would add the provision for a sport angler to use a spear or spear gun when swimming at the surface to take fish in salt water. And that one was approved. It made it a little bit easier for troopers not to have to worry about whether the person is underwater or not when they're, especially in the shallow waters. So there wasn't much contention to that one.
Good. Yeah, right. Yeah, that explains it for everybody. And then the 156 is fairly self-explanatory.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Same thing. It just carried it into personal use fishing authority in sport fishing.
Okay, and 157 thankfully failed. And does anybody have a question on 157? It was to allow a person holding a CFEC permit for multiple salmon net areas to commercially fish for salmon in more than one area per year, one net area. So, Andy, that's the commercial one, so you probably aren't up to speed on that one, correct?
Correct.
Okay. The next one is also commercial, that one's very similar, and that also failed. Okay, we want to go down to 160, and this is an interesting one. And did you follow this one at all, even though it's commercial? It was the sale of wild king salmon caught in hatchery terminal harvest areas.
I didn't follow it too closely. I was listening a little bit, but I was really focused on the other proposals a little bit more, had a little more meaning to sport fish.
Yeah. This one failed for good reason, so I just want to pass that along for information. I did listen to the deliberations on that. Okay, so then the next one is groundfish, so we'll go on to 163. and that's prohibit guiding and personal use in fish fisheries. No action taken because the author requested to withdraw. So we'll go down the next page, Kyle. So on 164 was established registration and reporting requirements for personal use guides and transporters. And thankfully, that one also fails. Does anybody have a question on that? We had opposed that proposal. And then number 165 is to prohibit compensation for guide services to assistant fisheries. And that one carried. And we fought real hard. We supported that proposal. Did not support that proposal. We fought real hard for that. I think that is going to come up again. It's a very contentious issue. And Andy, did you want to talk to that one? And our
sure. I can say Stan Zeri was the lone vote to disagree with that proposal.
Right.
And there are certainly, it could come up again in the future just because there are certain areas where, if you're thinking like Lower Yukon, Lower Kuskokwim, some people, for whatever reason, don't have a boat that year. They just want to, their friend takes them out, but it's their time and energy to go out with them, not just the compensation for, they're allowed to compensate for fuel and food while they're out there in the gear, but not, they can't pay the person directly. So it may cause a conflict in the future.
Well, Stan Zeri was really concerned about the impact on somebody who was paying somebody $100 flat fee to take out a boat and gear just to help them get to a fishing area. And that happens quite often. And so he didn't want a violation on that particular point. So I think we're going to have to watch this very closely.
Gail, this is Al.
Sure.
Yeah, so, I've submitted a couple RCs on these things with the help of Mike Kramer, and it's still up to the interpretation of a wildlife trooper if somebody's being compensated or not. I think Stan brought up some very good points and was very concerned about the way the board was going on this, and I think we made a really compelling argument that non-commercial doesn't mean in the sense of what commercial is, it's what you do with your fish or can't do with your fish that makes it commercial or non-commercial. The board has still not grasped that concept.
You're absolutely right, Alan. I know you guys brought, and Stan brought it up and others, and Jessica brought it up, and they were having a hard time grasping that. They were also having a hard time grasping what it really, except for a few of the board members, what it really was like for a subsistence user to have to pay somebody to go out and help get a subsistence fish. Of course, on the Yukon right now, it's almost a moot issue. But it was quite an interesting discussion. And anybody can go to the board website and listen to that discussion if they want to. Charles, did you have any further comments?
Gail.
Go ahead, Mike.
Gail, this is Mike. I have a comment. The one other thing is, I don't think this was headed at the Yukon River. I think it was headed at the Copper and some of the others.
The problem is,
if you're fishing under a federal permit, it doesn't apply. They allow it.
Yeah. No, you're right, Mike. It was probably headed for the Copper and the Kenai, but Copper especially. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. Anybody else have a comment on that one before we go on? Okay, 166, establish a statewide bag limit for personal use finfish fisheries. We had opposed that, and it did fail for good reason. Is there anybody who wants to comment on that real quick? Okay, 167 was to require in-season reporting of subsistence and personal use salmon harvest within 5 days of harvest, and that was also failed 06 for good reason. Logistically, it would be really hard to do, and it was totally unnecessary. Okay, 168 carried. That was extend emergency order authority to allow restrictions of sport fisheries in contaminated waters. Anybody have a question on that?
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
You know, so when they have emergency orders, they last for 120 days, if I'm correct on that. So I don't know how they can allow the authority to, you know, go another 120 days, because I think the statute says that you, after 120 days, you either change the regulation or you have to bring it up as a proposal.
Andy, can you respond to that?
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, we do write some of these emergency orders, at least for sport fish, for, you know, for up to a year. I'd have to check in on that, on the regulation there. I know with some of these PFAS lakes, we did this for 3 or 4 years in a row annually until we got this proposal in to go to catch and release, say, for this last board meeting, the AYK, where we had, like, Moose Lake and Polaris Lake. We had those go to catch and release only fishing. The previous 3 or 4 years, they've been by EO annually. So I'll have to look that up. According to Al, to 120 days, but we...
Well, I don't understand. The department has the ability to EO. I don't know why they have to extend an EO. They can keep EO in it, or keep extending, or keep emergency order every time it expires. They can renew it. So I don't understand why the board has to address extending an emergency order.
Ah, I see. So what this did is... Originally, you know, obviously we always had the emergency order authority. Then with these PFAS contaminated lakes, they happened to be in Scott's Lakes. And I wasn't around for the original discussion on this, but it was felt that the emergency order authority didn't quite capture this contamination of Scott's Lake. So we went ahead and set a proposal in, and that's in regulation now for Scott's Lakes. What this does is extends it from Scott's Lakes to all waters that are contaminated.
Okay.
It doesn't have anything to do with the amount of time, the extension of time. It has to do with extending it from just Scott's Lakes only to all waters.
And I thought the commissioner had that ability already underneath his emergency order statute.
Yeah. Again, I wasn't around in those discussions 3 years ago when they decided to set this up for contaminated Scott's Lake. So I'm not absolutely positive on that reasoning. I can look that up if you'd like and get back to you. But, yeah, I mean, I've always thought it's kind of the same thing. Like, it seems like we have emergency order authority. We could do this. But I think they wanted to really specifically clarify for contaminated waters. They needed that clarification in there for some reason. I'm not quite certain.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see a follow-up on that.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Al, for the question. And Cal, you can take that off. Appreciate that. Okay, so the next item on the agenda is the Board of Fish, Cook Inlet, and Kodiak proposals, which are due April 10th, which is why we're having this meeting today. And we are basically thinking to reintroduce, and we have to adjust it to both Cook Inlet and Kodiak. The proposals that we had in 2020 for Prince William Sound on the egg production, and then also to do proposals on odalisk marking. And what I'm going to suggest to the group, we got permission from the full AC for the subcommittee to submit those proposals. And if we can agree on the parameters of those proposals, then a few of us will do the writing, because we did not have a work session in time to have writing on this. And before we have that discussion, Virgil, did you want to add something to that process?
Right. All we have to do is just basically copy our proposal that we had for Prince William Sound last time.
Right.
Which just says reduce them a minimum of 25%, or else, you know, because that's what they promised to do in 2001 and then didn't do it. of what their 2000 production was, because that's how the board controls that is how the board can control the production of the hatcheries, by how many eggs they're allowed to take for production to hatch out.
So we'll adjust that for some of the cook inlet hatcheries, and then and the main one is that I'm considering is Tatka Bay. And then we need to write one on odorless barking. And the issue is...
And the same thing for that. I think it's the Katoi hatchery. Is that the name of the one that's on the Fog Neck Island managed out of Cody?
That's on Fog Neck. Correct.
Yeah. And do the same thing for there. And I don't think they marked her odorless. And I know Nancy's not on here, is she?
No, but she sent me in the proposal she's working on.
Okie doke.
So here's what I'm thinking, is that I can take some of the language she has, and we can have this ready for the Wednesday meeting, because we're having our full AC on Wednesday, which will give us time to get approval and then submit the proposal.
Yeah, but this Wednesday is not a meeting. It's the second Wednesday of the month, isn't it?
Oh, you know what? You're right. That was why that's when we had the approval. Thank you.
Yeah, because I think we got the AC to agree that whatever we
do. We don't meet till 12. Yes, right.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. I get too many knees in my head today. Okay, so what we'll have to do then is to work on this language, and I'll work with you, Virgil. When do you get back from Whitehorse?
I get back Thursday late afternoon, I think around 5 o'clock or so.
Okay, so maybe Friday we can firm all this up. I'll get some drafts going, and we'll firm that up. I just want to get approval from this group on what we're going to do, and that would be, so you're talking about Cook Inlet and also Katoi on Kodiak Island.
Correct.
Okay. So I'll put that in here. Okay, so does any more comments from the AC members as to that process and why we're doing this? Okay.
I want to add one other thing. The commissioner's here at our meeting, and he told us there's a good chance that we won't get to fish for any king salmon on the Yukon River for 10 years, period. The way things are looking, and there's only one thing we can do about that, because there's not enough food in the marine environment, because productivity's low, and that's cut way back on hatchery production, and especially from the pink salmon, because that's where the competition is going with the king salmon. They're coming from, is with the king salmon, is the pink salmon. Of course, Gail has got all those various studies that she's found, were lots of scientists that are well-known scientists, some of them the chief fishery scientists from the state of Alaska, Fish and Game, have that's the conclusions they've come to. So anyway, just wanted to point that out, how important this issue is.
Thank you, Virgil. You're absolutely right, and it also leads into the next conversations we need to have. And as you, most of you know, the Board of Fish canceled their scheduled hatchery meeting for 2023, and we're going to send in a request for it to have another hatchery meeting to coincide with the work session. And that request has to go in fairly soon as well. That ties in also with what there's a legislative review discussion going on about hatcheries. And as far as I know, we're still in the discussion stage, but it's getting pretty serious. The last real legislative review that was done was in 1992. 91, 92. And there was some, during that review, there were some really good questions that are appropriate to ask today. And if anybody wants a copy of that review, I can certainly get it to you. But in the greater group that we're working with, we're requesting a really detailed legislative review that also leads into the fact that we're looking at forming a coalition of scientists, which I think is happening very quickly. And we're going to try to get some coordination on the questions that we have asked for both the hatchery legislative review and for the hatchery committee. So any questions on that?
I have a question.
Sure.
How, you know, like looking at the hatcheries that are affecting a lot of our fish, a lot are out of Japan and Asia too. So I know when we were down at Area M meeting, there was people that were going over to Japan for a big hatchery meeting. Anyone here involved?
We had a discussion about that. Kurt Chamberlain was part of that group. And there were several Alaskans that were at that meeting in Japan. They did bring it up. It was not on the agenda, actually, on the proliferation of Japanese hatchery fish that were affecting the Bering Sea. But they did bring it up with the delegation there. And apparently it was a conversation the Japanese were quite interested in, which leads us to believe, and I'm trying to get a hold now of some of the other people that were there, but at least me to believe that that we really should encourage our State Department to have those discussions. And I don't know what will ever come of it. Japan is pretty much an all-hatchery culture as far as their fish. They've been doing it for decades, mostly chum. And so the issue is, you know, how much are they willing to pull back? And also with Russia and Korea, and how much they're willing to be pulled back on hatchery fish that affect the Bering Sea, because that's our problem in the Bering Sea is the Asian hatcheries. In the Gulf of Alaska, it's the Alaska hatcheries. But there is some interconnection with all of them, and there is a lot of good research out there that reinforces the concept that hatchery fish are creating too many fish in the ocean at key trophic levels, and specifically for pink salmon, and that's creating not only a loss of our native salmon, but also a loss of size. The size reduction has really gone down in the years because of the lack of food, and a lot of course, is part of global warming. So that all these double whammies that they're coming at salmon all at the same time. And the production of hatchery fish is certainly not helping. For those of you who really want to understand how much is happening in the Bering Sea for hatchery production, you can go to the North Pacific Fisheries and Naturalist Fish Commission website. They do a huge amount of research on that. And that would be available for preview. And thank you for bringing that up, Eva. Does anybody have anything they want to add to that conversation?
Gail, this is Mike. I think with the whole concept that we're coming to understand now of the hatchery overproduction, I think we don't want to worry too much about the international things. I think we want to lead by example here. You know, in other words, we got to cut our own back and start there.
Good point. Thank you. That's a very good point, and that leads into a perfect conversation to have with the proposals. And I'm going to add that language in there. Alaska needs to be the example. Thank you. Okay, so going down to the next item, and that is the joint board's proposal. Kyle, can you put that up on the screen? Gail, are you there?
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so this proposal deadline is May 1st, and here is what I'm going to suggest, that we have another meeting on April 24th for the subcommittee, so that we can look at the proposals that we might consider for this meeting. And I think a lot of people are coming up with quite a few. So if you want to put on your calendars right now, we are going to probably have another Fish Committee meeting on the 24th. And we can also have this discussion at the next full AC meeting. And Mark, did you say we're going to probably have another full AC meeting in May, early May?
I was thinking we might have to.
Yeah, and I know that Kyle's last day for the season is May 5th. So we probably should keep that in mind.
And y'all can definitely meet later in May if you'd like. I can set up a meeting and have one of our staff from Juno kind of host the meeting online.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle, for that. I'm just thinking there are a number of meetings that are coming up around that time, too, like the Eurofoot preseason meeting, that actually is going to be before then. But hopefully we'll be done with most of our heavy meetings by then. So I'll leave that scheduling up to Mark and John. So anyway, this is what we're looking at is these regulations, that do include, advisory committees. And this would be a great opportunity to bring up that point about having remote, although we can do it sooner, but having remote testimony at the Board of Fish meetings. And the Board of Game does that already, don't they?
We do try to work with the, especially the rural AACs that they can testify for the AAC during the normal first couple days of public testimony, or they can testify before their area or region comes up, as we did in the last board meeting.
Okay. And is there any regulation that either supports or doesn't support that?
Kyle from Board Support, and no, there's nothing in the regulations that mentions remote access, remote participation. The way these last 2 years have operated, it's been at the board's discretion as to whether they want to allow remote testimonies from AC members or the public.
Okay, good. Thank you. That's good to know, Kyle. Thank you. So we're going to think about proposals that we want to put in before this May deadline, and we will meet on the 24th for that discussion. Is any more comments on this process? Okay. Thank you, Kyle. What I don't have on this agenda, and I apologize, and we can either do this now or we can wait later down the agenda, but let's wait till we get to Yukon River panels. I'd like to ask Christy if she can give us a brief update on what she thinks is going to happen this season, although I think we pretty much all know. Would you be comfortable with that, Christy?
Yep, that's fine, Gail.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's go on to there's a special meeting on April 19th on proposal number 173. Mike, you had some comments on that. Do you want to talk to that? And do you have that proposal handy, Kyle, that you could put up there? And this was a proposal out of the Kuskokwim that has some, maybe you can explain what happened, Kyle, but it has some problem with language and it didn't get in the board proposal book in the correct way. Is that the issue?
No, a little simpler than that. I think it just got lost.
Oh, okay. I knew there was something in amateur, but I didn't know what.
A good reminder to why boards always recommend that when the proposal book gets published in the end of the summer or the fall, if you submitted a proposal, to look through the book and make sure it's in there. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember that. I remember Mar suggesting that. And this is from the village of Quahog, and Mike Tinker, do you want to talk to your observations?
Yes, Jeff, can you hear me?
I can, thank you.
There, okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
How about now? Can you hear me? Okay. So this is one of the first places where there is a direct link in the discussion for this proposal between subsistence and commercial fishing. As we all recognize, you know, we've tried to keep in front of us the fact that the subsistence fishing and the allocation especially is supposed to take precedence. This community is trying to do something about that, and I'm not sure if what they have orchestrated gets them, you know, really where they're going. But it does give others and the board an opportunity to talk about the priorities and, in this case, how a gear-type situation might fit one or the other or both. So I think we should look at it with that in mind from the standpoint of what's good and what's bad about the possibility of, in this case, restricting gear and time in order to, you know, accommodate this, mostly king salmon, but it would still be, I think, a good thing for people to look at just from that standpoint. It's not tied up with a whole fishery and every kind of salmon and that kind of thing. It's specifically, you know, to get the fish through, but still allow enough fishing for subsistence and commercial.
That's a good point. And this board meeting is scheduled for 4:30 on an afternoon. I don't know if the board was intending to have a lot of commentary on this, and it's going to be, Kyle, correct me if I'm wrong, this is by on a Zoom meeting, is that correct?
Sorry, I had to find the unmute. Yes, that's correct. It's going to just be online only. There will be no oral testimony. There will be a written comment that is due, I think the deadline is 1 week before the meeting.
I have April 7th written down, yeah.
I think the deadline is the 12th to get I think the 12th because the meeting is the 19th. And there will sounds like be an opportunity to submit record copies during the meeting. But be like it's not expected to be more than two or three hours, and it'll start at 4:30 I think in the afternoon. So
correct. So we can submit public or written comments and. Mike, do you want to work on some language for that if we're interested in doing that?
I will.
Okay, that'd be great.
I'll do that.
So,
yeah.
So, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
So, you know, question for you and Mike is it just to really separate the subsistence fishery from the commercial fishery?
Is there anybody from the department that wants to weigh in before I put my foot in my mouth?
Two away.
Right. Shane, do you or anybody from the department want to say something about this?
No, sorry. I just don't know very much about it.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I'm looking at here is... It's asking that there's going to be a complete separation from people commercial fishing and subsistence fishing, you know, unlike some of the other fisheries that we have where, you know, home pack can be included in a commercial fishery.
Yeah, but that home pack is a little bit different.
I understand, but looking at this, it really tries to separate subsistence fishing from commercial fishing. Maybe I'm way off.
Yeah, I think what they're saying is that they propose the gear restrictions apply equally to both subsistence and commercial fishing. Is the way I'm reading it.
And the dates, is what caught me.
Oh, the date, okay. Oh, to have, well, that's not uncommon to separate out the days.
Okay.
That's pretty common, actually. And I don't know, maybe in that particular district it isn't.
Well, Gail, that's where they're separated. It says commercial fishing for salmon will be closed Sundays, June 1 to July 15th. Subsistence
right.
fishing, I would assume that she'll be allowed.
Yeah, I was looking at the gear requirements. That's very common practice, so it may not be something that's common to that area. But in most commercial fisheries, you have separate openers. Just depending on you know, the structure of the region. So,
yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, I'll wait for your comments because you had said this was a good opportunity to bring that up, and we can bring that up without. I'm hesitant to say I support this completely without knowing more about the particular region. Is there anybody from the Kuskokwim on here that wants to speak to it? I don't think there is, but I would say that we could add our comments as you have suggested, Mike.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Hey, Gail.
Go ahead.
It's Chuck. Well, maybe you could clarify what, you know, when it says only one gill net may be operated per boat. Were they allowed before to use more than one gill net per boat?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know that fishery. And,
okay.
Yeah, and that I would be unwise. I would be unwise to say very much.
Or does this mean they could operate one commercial gill net and one at the same time run one subsistence gill net?
Well, yeah, I'm not, what I'm reading, yeah, exactly. What I'm, and maybe that was the practice, I don't know, but maybe that's why they want to separate it, is because, and if you think about a small boat fishery in that area, that might have been a practice, you know, but like I said, I don't want to speculate because I really don't know that district, but yeah, that's, so maybe if anybody wants to listen in on that board meeting, I think I will just to, see how far.
Gail, this is, so, you know, when I read down in what is the issue, it seems like that the subsistence fishery is more restrictive than the commercial fishery, and that seems to prompt this, you know, this proposal.
That's the way I read it too, Al. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to listen to that one.
Yeah, it would be. It would be.
What I want to focus on here is getting the board to make this look at the subsistence issues when they are considering things that have to do with the commercial fishery.
Right. Right. That is a good opportunity to do that. Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
Does anybody want to make a comment on what Mike just said? Okay. All right. So if we get that language and We can submit that. All right, thank you. You can take that off, I think, Kyle. Thank you. Okay, the next item is that there is a 2023 escape and goal review for AYK salmon stocks. Is there anybody, I basically threw this out for information. Is there anybody from the department who wants to address that briefly?
Yeah. Gail, this is Christy. I can tell you what escape and goals changed for fall season, so fall chum and coho. We had one coho salmon goal for the whole Yukon River drainage. It was the Delta Clearwater, and that escape and goal was discontinued. So we no longer have any escape goals for coho salmon on the Yukon River drainage. And then I'm not as familiar with the king salmon escape goals, but I think the Chena and the Salcha may have been modified. Maybe Andy would have more information on that one.
Yeah, thank you, Christy. My understanding is that there's could be as much as a couple of thousand coho in the Tanana drainage. That's an interesting change. Andy, do you want to comment on that?
For the Chena and Sulcha, the Chena, we changed the goal from, 3,300 to 6,500. Let me double check here. I got to pull it up again. Apologize here. I mean, I just basically, as they get more data, they plot the skin and reanalyze it just to basically hone it in a little bit sharper. So it was just a slight adjustment. It bumped it up from like 2,600 to 3,300 on the bottom end, but the top end stayed the same.
Okay, so would you repeat that, Andy? It went from
Let's see. The current escapement goals were established based on the. Hold on here. The goals were 3,300 to 6,500 for the Sulcha River and 2,800 to 5,700 for the Chena River.
And that was for Chum?
That was for, no, this is for Chinook. We don't have one for Chum.
Okay.
So Sportfish does the tower counting on the Chena and the Sulcha, and we look at Chinook salmon. We incidentally count Chum salmon. However, the project is specifically more for the king salmon, and the king salmon run ends prior to the end of the summer chum salmon run. So we get an incomplete count of the chum salmon. So there's no biological escapement goal for those rivers for chum salmon, only for the king salmon. And like I say, there was just a slight change in the Chena to bump it up, I think, from just off the top of my head, from 2,800 to 3,300 on the bottom end, and the top end stayed the same at 6,500.
Okay,
sorry, 6,700. Yeah.
Yeah, just for everybody's information, the actual escapement last year on the Chena for Chinook was 355.
Yeah, on the Chena, correct.
Yeah.
It did not meet the escapement goal. That is correct. No. by a long shot.
Yeah, right. That was a slight understatement.
I mean, they review these every 3 years, and so there can be slight tweaks or major tweaks. Like on the Delta Clearwater, like Christy said, we got rid of that as an escapement goal. We still use the information. It's still important information.
Uh-huh.
It's collected there, but it wasn't even used to manage that fishery at all. Whereas, you know, sometimes we use the tower goals can be utilized in season at the Chena River for and the Sulcha, relative to what's going on in those rivers and the fisheries that happen there for sport fishery.
Correct, yeah.
The Sulcha River didn't make an escapement either, did it?
No.
I was just going to say, yeah. None of our tributaries made escapement last year. None. And correct me if I'm wrong, Christy or Andy, but that is my understanding.
Correct. Sportfish was closed the whole season. The last 2 years.
Yeah. So we have not made any escapement goals, and that is where the crisis is. Okay. So anyway, that review, and thank you for that, both of you. Appreciate it. That review is pretty extensive. It's pretty interesting, and I would recommend people looking at it if they want to. All right. The next item is the area M follow-up. That's just basically information. There are a lot of things that are in the conversation as to what we might do. One of them, of course, is is working on a genetics lab, for that area, and that is in consideration. So I don't have too much more information on that. There are a lot of people working on some specific ideas, which I think is great, and to work with people in that area as well. And Ernie, did you want to say anything real quickly before I move on?
No, I appreciate the conversation, though. Thanks, Gail.
Okay. Yeah, and thank you for joining us. It's an issue that we all need to pay a lot of attention to and do work on, and it's heart-wrenching on everybody's side. We understand that completely. Any questions in particular? Mike Creamer has just joined us. Mike, we were just talking about the escapement goals, and I don't know if you heard most of that conversation.
No, I'm sorry I missed it, but I'll try to catch up later. Thanks, Gail.
Yeah, you can catch up with me later. It was Christy and Andy gave a brief rundown. Okay, so then there's another resolution that I would like to develop to the department, and that is to get timely reports that are relative to board action to the stakeholders 90 days before. And it could be 60, that's 90 days is preferable. And if we can't do that, then we should take that action off the agenda. And here's where this comes out of the area and meeting. When we have the 2022 genetics report that was done and delivered on that Friday night before the board meeting, and nobody had a chance to review it or to react to it. And there was a lot of real heartbreak, not only for us, but Chicknick had a similar situation on a proposal that was to combine their two runs into Chicknick on Sockeye. And so the issue is really you've got the department hopefully can give us plenty of time look at these things before the board meeting so that we have ample time to develop our testimony or whatever we need to do. And that goes for all sides. It doesn't matter which side of the gate you're on. And so at our last AYK meeting, that was a discussion, and I'm going to develop a resolution to do that very respectfully. We all know the time constraints that the department's under as well as everybody else. But the issue is if we don't have sufficient time for stakeholders to review the material, it's a real unfair advantage. And it's such an important issue. Any comments on that?
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
Do you think that's a potential joint board proposal?
I do. We're going to put it in the form of a resolution, but because that would be before the Board of Fish, but this was to the department because it's really department action.
I think you might find some of the same issues on the game side.
Oh, okay.
This is the first time I've heard of it, so I was, just thinking out loud that, potentially this might be a joint board proposal instead of a resolution.
Okay, all right.
Codify something.
Yep. Or both.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, it could be both. It could be both a resolution for this particular one using Area M as the example of where the stakeholders had to wait until the very last minute. But as Al is real aware, we've been fighting this thing for 20 years with regards to just the department's comments on proposals.
Yeah,
them 90 days before a meeting.
Yeah, and thank you for that too, because that was on my list.
Well, what I'm getting at is in the codify, they're supposed to work with the advisory committees and get those comments out to them, and they just ignore it. And
yeah.
I think it'd be a great joint board proposal, and to make them talk about it.
Okay, and And I don't want to put any of our local agency people on the spot because they're terrific. But I do know there was a situation last on the AYK proposals where we had worked with the local department members, and I think they were sideswiped by the state comments as well.
That happens fairly frequently, Gail.
Oh, well, didn't realize it was that often, but thank you, Mike. So I think it will help all of us, and it would certainly help the politics if we can get them in more timely. Because that's a big bone of contention for everybody. And I will bring that up to the AYK group on Thursday. So thank you. So I'll be drafting something, and then I'll have it before the full AC meeting. When we meet next week. Okay. And then the next business is basic.
Gail.
Yes, Virgil.
Yeah, they should require the staff comments to be made available to publish before the comment deadline from the public is, so that we can comment on the staff comments.
Good. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Virgil. I appreciate that. That's a very good suggestion. Andy. Andy, you had a comment?
No.
Was that a yes?
No, sorry.
Oh, okay.
I had my mic on and I accidentally sneezed. Something just a piece of dust off there.
Sorry about that. okay.
Because he really wanted to say something but couldn't.
Right. So, does anybody from the department want to say, have any suggestions on this from the department side?
Gail, this is Christy. I've been through quite a few Board of Fish cycles with AYK now, and it's a pretty common thing for the ACs to want our department comments and to want staff reports to help give them background. And we try to provide the background that we can, but I think it would help everyone if the deadlines were earlier.
Okay. Thank you. We will work on that. I was going to take a break, but actually we're moving along pretty fast. If all of you don't mind, we can keep pressing through this. So the next item is just information that I in your packets, and that was the bycatch task report, final report, and that was the state bycatch review committee. There's two bycatch committees. I sent out information on both of them earlier this week. That was, or last week, that was for the federal side through the North Pacific Council, and then, which is ongoing right now, and the Alaska bycatch, which concluded there with this final report. It's very interesting. I would suggest you take a look at it if you can. Does anybody want to make a comment on that? And as all of you know, the council is meeting right now. We started the 6th, actually, I'm sorry. And they will be reviewing the reports. It's all listed on the website. And they'll be reviewing reports only. There's no action going to be taking on, it's not a preliminary action of any kind. That will come next year or later in the season. I think it's not going to be until next year. So right now, go ahead.
There's something we just found out today about bycatch at the treaty meeting, and that is that the information just became available on the bycatch equivalent is what they call it, which means they take the age of the fish that are caught. These are king salmon. This is in the Bering Sea pollock fishery. Take the age of them, and then they calculate out when they would have got to the come up the Yukon River, and this is just on the Canadian stock, so, and that's which is now 42% of what comes into the Yukon, and that hadn't been updated since 2015, I think is what they said, and that's just now become available. So I just wanted to let you know that, how far behind they are on some of this stuff.
Wow. Yeah, thanks, Virgil, for that. I will be trying to listen in on the council's discussions about this. It's item C2 on their agenda. And you can listen in on the council side. The AC and the Science and Statistical Committee usually are online. But you can listen in for the council deliberations.
Gail, this is Al.
Hey, Al.
Yeah, so a question to Virgil. So the age structure, since we've lost so many, we don't have any 9 or 8 or hardly any more 7-year-olds, so what's the age of the fish getting past the treaty obligation?
I think 5-year-olds dominant.
We don't really have that. I think the majority of the fish are 5 years and younger now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, it's real significant. And another thing is the competition in the marine environment, because you're not getting enough food to eat, is causing them to come back earlier as well. And so that's another issue with the competition from the hatchery fish.
Yep, two big ones. I don't know if you've seen this, but the Salmon State has some really hard-hitting ads that are on TV right now. And I don't get regular TV, but I get it through my YouTube. And it's there's some really pointed ads. If you get a chance to see them, they're pretty good, actually. Does anybody want to comment further on the bycatch issue? And that information on bycatch for both the A season, Pollock A and Pollock B season, is available on the council website. It goes back, to the beginning when they were recording those. So it goes back couple of decades at least. And that's real interesting to watch. And the issue, of course, as you all know, is an amendment on for chum salmon, because we do have an amendment for Chinook salmon that triggers, we've got two actually, one triggers the whether the boats are allowed to fish once they hit that mark on the Chinook. And then in low abundance, which is right now, we have that three river index, which is the second trigger, and that's the one that's operative right now. So, okay, so, we want to do another resolution, to the Board of Fish right now, on the management stock, on the stock, I'm sorry, stocks of management concern. Is that what you were thinking? Virgil?
Yes.
I put that on the here.
Exactly. What did you ask for, Gail?
Well, we started out earlier talking about the stocks of concern, and we were talking about a resolution to the Board of Fish to do right now.
Okay. The projection is none of our salmon stocks, well, they don't do one on coho, but the ones for the Yukon, I mean, for Canada, none of those stocks statement goals are projected to be met this coming year, and they're not projected to be met for our side either. That's on Sherman King.
Well, we haven't for Chinook for a long time, and we have been pressing the board before, and the department actually, to put them on a stock of management concern, because right now they're still on the stock of yield. The Nooshinggak River, however, got almost an immediate listing for stock of management concern.
I know that. And so we need to, they need to do it for Chinook. But the, some salmon stocks, they're not under any stock of concern status, not even yield. Even though, like in the upper Yukon, we haven't fished basically for 4 years.
This it should meet the criteria.
Our summer chum fishery in 2019 was so poor, I mean, it was may as well have not had one in the upper river. That's the year we had the warm water.
Right. Right.
But this will be 4 full years in a row on fall chum with zero fishery on fall chum.
And I think, isn't 4 years the criteria?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
Explain to me what the advantage of a resolution is.
Well, if we can get the department to put that under stock of concern, basically it's just to vent, we're venting our frustration. And if we can get them to put that under put Chinook under management concern and put Chum under a yield concern. And that determines and Christy and Andy, correct me if I'm wrong, but that determines the level of management of how they manage. And it seems to me like Chinook has been managed as a stock of we've been under conservation guidelines for Chinook for a long time, but we're not calling it a stock of management concern. It's just a yield concern right now. So, Chris,
I don't think I'll be wrong on this. Okay. The board has to decide what's a management concern or what is a stock of concern. The department, every cycle, is supposed to bring recommendations to the board for stocks of concern. But if you remember, when Chinook got made a stock of management concern, it was, the guy that got off the board, makes me mad when I can't think of his name, but anyway, it was his last board meeting, and he made the motion to make him a stock of management concern, Chinook Sockeye.
Well, that was Israel, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was Israel that did that. It's the board that makes that decision.
Okay,
department is not going to make up any recommendations because we're not up for our regular cycle. However, we meet all the criteria to become a stock of management concern now.
We do.
Yes, for the chum as well, chum and Chinook both. And that's what we need to make a proposal to the Board of Fish to do that, because that's who does it, is the Board of Fish.
I thought the department made a recommendation to the board, and they approved it.
But they only do that during cycle.
Okay, yeah.
That's the only time they do it. They're supposed to do an analysis pre-cycle and then have that ready at the work session.
So this would be an ACR then?
And no, it's better not to do an ACR. It's better to just do what we're doing.
Okay, all right.
Not do an ACR. That way it's going to get addressed immediately, and that way that'll give Stan more ammunition to try to get it passed.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Go ahead.
I still don't. So a resolution will get before the board versus the, the ACs or all the local ACs that are involved. Asking for an ACR when there's been 4 years passed, and typically that's the line you have to cross is 4 years to be a stock of concern if you're not meeting escapement goals or a BGM.
I'd have to go back and look at the guidelines for the stock of concern designations, but that's my understanding. Is there anybody from the department that can clarify that?
You want to do that?
Gail, this is, I,
I think Virgil was saying that you need to draft a petition rather than a resolution in order to get it before the board right now.
Okay, yeah, that's what we were concerned. Confused and concerned. But thank you, Christy. We do, that would be an emergency petition, yeah. I kept getting hung up on that resolution, and that was not a, that's why I was sounding spacey. Doesn't take much. Okay, so we need to do an emergency petition to the Board of Fish to make Chinook stocks of management concern and summer chum need to be under yield concern.
Yeah, Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
Boy, I wish we'd had this when the Board of Fish was meeting, because if we would have done that emergency petition while they were in session or while the Board of Game was meeting, you know, the Board of Game itself would have to address it, not the commissioner.
Oh, right.
You know, right. Instead of letting the commissioner make the decision, because the Board of Fish and, you know, the Board of Game have gave that delegated authority out of session or out of meetings,
right,
to the commissioner, you know, there's much more advantage to having that petition while the board's in a meeting.
Oh, absolutely. So, go ahead.
Point out that the Board of Fisheries will be in session on April 19th.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. So that would be the way to do it.
Yes.
And that, get that in immediately. Yeah, and that is due April 7th. So thank you, Kyle. and then we can still put it in this ACR. If it doesn't have any traction, we can do it as an ACR for the work session.
Okay, Gail, let me say something else about the petition.
Go ahead. Yeah,
it has to be addressed within 30 days of the day they got it. So if they put it in right away, then the board will address it at their meeting on the 19th.
Okay.
Yes, and that's the advantage.
Right. Thank you both. Yes, you're correct. So I will work on language for that, and when you get back, Virgil, we'll get that cleaned up. Actually, it won't take much. It's just, that's a real simple request, actually. And we just need to use the numbers that we have to support that. And if there's, and Christy, if we should shop that around with the department on the correction for the criteria, is there anybody we should do that with, yourself?
Yeah, Gail, yeah, this is Christy. You can work through Kyle to submit the emergency petition. If you want Dean and I to look at it to make sure you have the numbers correct for...
That's not an answer, right.
Yeah, we're happy to do that and provide you with the right run size numbers if you guys need that, or what the escapement numbers are and how many years we've met escapement or not met escapement.
Yeah, I just need to... we can look it up, and I want a clarification from the department on that. Thank you for that.
Once it's ready to submit, I'd be happy to help you get that in. I believe that could be submitted just directly to Art Nelson, or since there is an open call for written comment on that Proposal 173 and the meeting, the special meeting to cover that on the 19th, I think that's where it could go. I know I've seen emergency petitions come in just as record copies during other meetings. So, but I will get some information from Art and Christy and get back to you.
Thank you, Kyle. Appreciate it. Okay, good. Well, now we're going to go to Yukon River panel, where Christy and Virgil are right this moment. And tomorrow morning is the public access and public testimony sign up. And I sent that information out to everybody earlier. Virgil, do you and Christy, you want to make some comments on that as to what we need to know about action items?
Well, one of the things we're going to go over the escapement goal review on the Chinook salmon for the Canadian stocks. And we decided... Well, in closed session, I must say anything that we decided in closed session, but there'll be announcements of stuff made tomorrow, reports on everything made tomorrow, stock status of all the species, and what the outlooks are, and update on projects. And we funded all the projects, or we're going to fund all the projects, I think. But we made a number of decisions in the last, well, today, because we met with the Canadians all day, and we never even took a normal lunch break. They had sandwiches brought in, and we did a semi-working lunch, where we didn't really stop except for long enough to get some sandwiches. And so, anyway, there will be a whole bunch of stuff come up tomorrow. I can't really say anything about the stuff that is not already public.
Okay. And that starts at 9 o'clock tomorrow, White Horse time. So I will be listening in on that tomorrow. Thank you.
Yeah, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
A question for Virgil. You said that all the projects will be funded. Who's funding projects?
The projects that are getting funded are funded by the State Department, by the treaty itself.
So federal monies?
Federal money, yes.
Okay, thanks.
And there are two designated areas for that, and that's R&M and R&E money. Do you want to explain that, Virgil, to people?
Okay, R&M money can be spent inside Alaska. It doesn't necessarily have to be Canadian origin fish, and R&E money has to be all directed at Canadian origin salmon.
Good clarification, thank you.
So is that U.S. dollars or Canadian dollars?
It's in U.S. dollars. Right now, a U.S. dollar is worth 75. I mean, a Canadian dollar is worth 75 cents in American money. Did you catch that?
Yeah, just teasing you, Virgil.
Yeah,
and if this is Christy. If any of you guys want to listen in on the public session tomorrow or the next day, it's live streamed on YouTube, and you can back it up as well or watch it anytime. There should be a couple good presentations, and there's an agenda online if you want to key into certain presentations. But I think there's going to be another Alaska Peninsula genetics presentation. So the Canadian panel focused on Canadian origin. Yeah, you may want to tune into some.
Yeah.
There's one other thing I found out today, or yesterday, we got in kind of a heated discussion with the commissioner about hatcheries, and I asked him, I don't know how many actual processing plants are in Area M. I know there's a brand new one in Falls Pass, and so how long the fish are in tenders traveling to a fish processing plant. But the thing that confuses me is the testimony at that area meeting. All these people are complaining they're going to lose from King Cove and Sandpoint, lose the tax money, the fish landing tax money. Well, the fish landing tax money only goes to the town where the fish are landed. So if they don't have a processing plant there, they don't get any of it. And so I don't understand that. And that's something I want to talk to the commissioner about and try to get clear on that, that makes a whole bunch of that testimony a total moot point at that Area M meeting, with the exception of Area M, because I know there's a fish processing plant there, a brand new one, that's owned by that outfit out of Sitka that the former commissioner, the red-headed gal.
Silver Bay Seafoods.
Yeah, Silver Bay. It's a brand new plant.
I think that's at Falls Pass, though, isn't it?
That's in Falls Pass itself, yes. It's Falls Pass. Sure. But I don't know if there's a plant. The commissioner didn't know if there was a plant in Sandpoint or King Cove.
There is one in Sandpoint. I think there's two. Ernie, can you clarify that?
Sure. Trident has, in the Lucius East Borough, Trident has plants in a small one in Falls Pass in Sandpoint, also in Akatan. Peter Pan has one in Fort Moeller, and then King Cove, Silver Bay just there in Falls Pass. And then the borough, so all those communities get municipal fish tax. The borough also takes another cut at it. So that's what they're talking about.
As far as Acatan from the fishery.
Yeah, no, so Acatan has nothing to do with salmon, really. That's really just pollock.
Okay, so are they hauling the salmon there to get processed?
No, Acatan, you know, they might process a spare, stray salmon once in a while, but there's no salmon being processed in Acatan.
So all the salmon are processed in, most of them are processed in either Silver Bay and False Pass, and then Sand Point has Trident, and who else?
That's it. Well, Peter Pan has a kind of a store there. They don't process there. So Peter Pan processes in King Cove and up in Fort Mola on the north side.
Okay, so Sand Point is just Trident.
For the most part, Peter Pan has a footprint there, but they don't process it. Correct.
Okay, does Peter Pan process in King Cove?
Yeah. Big cannery there.
King Cove. And who else processes in King Cove?
That's it.
That's it. Okay, so Trident is in Sand Point, Peter Pan's in King Cove.
And Fort Mueller. They're in Fort Mueller, too.
Yeah, Fort Mueller, but yeah. But that's around the north side.
Right.
Okay, Silver Bay and False Pass.
That would be right on the edge of...
Right, I know right where it
is. Yeah, Bristol Bay, right. I do have a map of all. I have a map of all the canneries in that area. I'll send it to you, Virgil.
Yeah. Well, see, False Pass is between Unimak Island and the end of the peninsula, is what it is.
So yeah.
It's closest to the most fish getting harvested in the June fishery.
That is correct. Yes.
Okie doke. So there's no reason why those vessels should be 2 or 3 days in transit to get to the processing plant after they fish get delivered to them. They should be there the same damn day.
Well, Ernie, don't you have tenders out on the ground?
Yeah, tenders are a big part of the salmon fishery. You bet.
So they deliver to the tenders on the ground.
Yeah, the tenders are out there, and the tenders probably go to the fish plant every day, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they sure do.
Okie doke, because I had kind of a heated discussion with the commissioner yesterday about on this subject, about that they, because see, I brought up the Fort Mueller genetics lab in a 20-foot Connex, and he said that couldn't work because they couldn't do it the day the fish are caught, but I think they could do it the day they're caught. They would have to put one in one of those fish plants to do it.
Well, that's the discussion we're having with right now.
And maybe a department vessel.
Yeah, they do it at Port Mueller. And that one actually travels. It's on a barge.
I know that.
Yeah.
Because we had a big discussion with the guy that, dang it, what's his name?
Tyler?
No, the scientist in charge of it.
Oh, Templin?
Yeah. Schindler.
Oh, wow. Schindler. How about Daniel Schindler? Yeah, Daniel Schindler.
We had a discussion with about it. I talked to him about it.
Is he in Whitehorse?
Huh?
Is he in Whitehorse?
No. At the Board of Fish meeting, I talked to him about it.
Right. Yeah, we've been talking with
him. They get the samples processed the day they're caught.
They do. And they
so
did
there's
that.
No reason they can't do that in RAM.
Right. So.
Because the commissioner said the processors are too far away. He says Acutan. And I said, I didn't know they harvest or processed salmon in Acutan. Now I just now found out they don't.
Good heavens. That's bizarre. I don't know. I mean,
well, we've got that cleared up in my mind and Christy's mind. Because I had a pretty good heated conversation with the commissioner yesterday.
Yeah, I'd like to hear more about that one.
There was a meeting over this. But that's all in closed session.
Okay, yeah. I would like to hear a lot more about that, though, what you can tell us.
Okay.
Yeah, great. Okay, any more conversation on that? That was good intel. Thank you, Virgil. And we'll be listening in to a Yukon River panel. And Christy, that leads up to very quickly, is tell us what we all know. There's going to be no season at all for Chinook this year. And we don't, what's going to happen with Chum, we don't know yet.
Yeah, so just really briefly, all of our forecasts for Chum and for King are below our statement goals. And if you want the point estimates and to hear the ranges, I have Shane Ransberry on the line, and the range is above the statement goal for fall Chum and for summer Chum, and he could tell you about those. But the likelihood that we actually make the upper end of our range we're telling everyone to just expect to not be fishing this year for subsistence. And if we do, we'll be pleasantly surprised and be ready to provide opportunity where we can in season.
Yeah, that's consistent with what we all thought. And there is a preseason Yurtfa meeting going to be happening on April 19th to 20th.
Yep.
And I will be at that meeting for both days. I have a presentation for a small part of that. And the department will be there for sure, I know. And you'll be there, right, Christy?
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, let's out.
Go ahead, Al.
I'm kind of concerned about Christy's statement about, you know, providing opportunity if the escapement, you know, is slightly higher than what they think, and then they'll provide that opportunity as it exists. So that opportunity that exists, is it going to go from the mouth to the headwaters?
Yeah, so we know that people haven't been fishing for the last 3 years, and so when we do try to provide subsistence opportunity, we're going to try to spread it out among the districts. And right now, the summer manager and the fall manager were on the same page to try and wait to get enough fish in the river to be able to do that. And so usually our run projections are more certain when we get close to the midpoint of the run, which would allow us to spread that harvest out to all districts instead of opening fishing at the very beginning of the run.
Oh, great. So you'll try to give that opportunity for the people upriver as well as the people downriver.
Yep.
Equally.
Yep, to the best we can.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Do you guys want to forecast?
Yeah, thank you. Go ahead, please.
So for Chinook, the preliminary forecast, which is going to assess out with the Canadians, is 62,000 to 104,000 fish with a midpoint of 82,000. Typically, drainage-wide run sizes below 150,000 fish cannot meet the escapement goals, so we do not expect to meet goals to run this magnitude. The Canadian origin forecast is a preliminary point estimate below the lower end of the IMEG at 42,000. And then for summer chum, the prelim drainage-wide forecast is for a point estimate of 557,000 fish with a range of 280,000 to 900,000. But these are fish that are coming off the really warm weather that we had a few years back, so it's unclear if that's actually going to pan out that high. And the drainage-wide escapement goal, on 2019. And the drainage-wide escapement goal for summer chum, just a reminder, is 500,000 for the lower end. And then for fall chum, the forecast point estimate is 251,000 with a range of 112,000 to 602,000. And the lower end of the drainage wide escaping goal for fall chum is 300,000. And then coho salmon, we don't have a point estimate, but it's anticipated to be below average, where the average is 222,000.
So we're estimating that we're not going to meet escapement goals next year.
Right. It's possible, but we're expecting that we'll not.
Right. And especially with that 2019 year class. Okay. Thank you, Shane. Those numbers for all of us who follow the numbers are extraordinarily low. We'll be watching them very closely. But yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. So the question for you, any of you at, in Whitehorse, are we going to be having any discussion on mitigation measures?
Can you say that again, Gail?
Is there going to be a presentation on mitigation measures?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay. We'll just listen in. Thank you. I was after a particular issue, but I don't want to bring it up unless the panel's going to.
I want to hear Virgil's whispering.
Virgil, what can you legally tell us, Virgil?
I hear what you said. I didn't quite catch it, and she didn't either.
Oh, well, I was trying to elicit a response based on something I heard today, but I don't want to bring it up until the panel brings it up. So it's cryptic. Sorry about that. Okay, so next item for North Pacific Council, I have an action item listed, but I think it's a moot issue. This was the new council appointments to the Secretary of Commerce. The governor typically has three names they put in for council seats, for each council seat. The first name has a star after, which is the governor's preference, and that was Rudy, can't think of his last name, it'll come to me in a minute, who is a CDQ seat, and the seat that that's being replaced is Simon Kinney, who's the chair. And he has termed out. The council does have term limits. The Board of Fish does not. And so that seat is being replaced probably by another CDQ seat. But the two alternate seats, and I was an alternate twice on this process, so it's usually a throwaway seat, is when a throwaway candidate. But the two alternates, one was Sam Raybung, and another one was Tom Toby from the department. It's highly unusual for the council, for the governor to put in two department seats. And the reason is that the commissioner already has a designated seat on the council. That's the given. So for us to have a backup of two department seats is highly unusual. And there was a lot of pressure to try to get in a subsistence seat for that. And there were a lot of candidates. I think I heard there were 50-some candidates, and that was pretty much ignored. So does anybody who's following that process want to say something on that? So anyway, that's where that is right now, is with the Secretary of Commerce to make a decision, which we're expecting fairly soon. If anybody wants to call the Secretary and have a comment on that, they're more than welcome to. I know quite a few people are. But I think it's almost too late to do that. We've already talked about the bycatch review at this April meeting. There again, I just want to emphasize that it's just a review of some of the preliminary information that they've come up with. They've had two meetings of that council bycatch committee, and the minutes are available on their website. I do, if you have time to listen to them, they are pretty interesting. So if you get a chance to take a look if you're so interested. Okay, the next item on the agenda is questions for ADF&G. It's just something that I'd like to throw out for all my meetings from now on, that if we have any miscellaneous questions that we wanted to present to the commissioner or anybody else, we should just keep that in mind, and we can add that to a list. And so if any of you have any particular questions that you'd like to add to that list, please let me know, or you can say something now. And this would be over and above the items we've discussed. I know there's a group of us that are developing a number of questions, and maybe at the next meeting we'll have that more framed out. Okay, so we're going to have a meeting on April 24th. It says May here. Well, that's for the full meeting, but April 24th is the fisheries subcommittee meeting. Mark, if you're still on, if we can have a May meeting for the stocking plan and for the PFAS, is that what you're thinking?
Is that when you would rather do it in May, Gail? You don't want to do it at the next meeting?
You mean on the 24th? Oh no, if we can do it on the 12th, that'd be great. Yeah, I keep forgetting we have another meeting in between. Yeah, no, that would be really good if we have time for it.
Right. Yeah, I'm just not sure yet, but hopefully we do have time. I think we're going to spend some time on board of game proposals, I think.
Yeah, I had heard that, right. Andy, would Andy be giving that stocking plan report? Is that something you would do, Andy?
Sorry, I had to get muted. Yeah, let me get together with April. I think I recall her saying she would give that report, but I'll get with her either way. I mean, she can give me the materials as well.
Okay. And we'll want to tell you we'll get back to you very soon.
Definitely soon, because I know she is, she's out of town this week. I'm not sure if she's back in next week. I need to make sure of that as well.
Okay.
If not, I can talk to Kelly too, but go ahead and let me know what you're thinking. I'll check in with Kelly in April and double check on that as well.
Okay. That'd be great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I don't know who wants to give the PFAS report. I can't remember who I had in mind for that. I guess I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, and Klaus he's handled some of that. But, you know, again, I handle some of that stuff as well. It's we can get some information at this point, what we have in hand. But it's kind of, we're having some other meetings going on, so hopefully in the future we'll have even more information. It's not just fish and game that's involved in this, so to speak. It's Department of Health and DEC as well.
Yeah, I can imagine. So would that be something that you would have more information on for a May meeting if we had it?
Yeah, we are supposed to have another meeting here at the end of this month, so maybe we'd have a little bit more information. But it's still a process that's ongoing. So it's just a matter of collecting some of this data over time. We've had a non-governmental agency had a report out I can't remember if we discussed it at our last meeting or not, but.
I know what you've been, when you're talking about. It was a very good report, I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's an interesting report. The issues with it are really that they've never talked to the DEC about it, and the DEC can't really provide an opinion on it because it lacks the ability to evaluate their methods. It goes so far, the DEC said they have specific labs that they actually have the water tested at, and if it's not tested at these labs, then they don't trust the data. So there are some issues in that regard.
Okay. I think what our members are interested in is just getting an update of who's doing what and what we have to look out for as far as impact on local.
Sure. Yeah, we can get that together for sure. That's pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you. And so, Mark, maybe we should put the PFAS on the May meeting?
Yeah, that sounds fine.
Okay, thank you. Okay,
Gail, this is Al.
Go ahead, Al.
So what's the scuttlebutt on the new director of fish?
What are you talking about?
Who's going to be the new? Who's going to be replacing Ritzka or
Raybon?
No, the director of fish.
Right.
Russ. I don't know. Anybody from the department want to address that?
They don't share that with us.
I know some names have been shared in this, and they're on that list, so I was just curious. I haven't heard anything neither.
Oh, okay. Well, if anybody has any inside information, love to hear it.
Oh, this is the meeting.
Yeah. Tinker, do you have anything? Mike, are you still on? I think we might have lost him. He usually
All of a sudden he's tight-lipped.
Well, yeah, I think he's not on. Right. He's never tight-lipped. You know. we'll check that out.
Al, are you asking about director of sport fish or commercial fish?
Oh, sport fish.
Sport fish.
Placing ruts.
Yeah, well, Tom Palby is in there as the acting, but I don't know whether he's going to be there. I don't know.
Oh, there's several names in there. I know Tom's acting, but there are other names that applied.
Yeah, I have no idea. We could ask the commissioner tomorrow.
Oh, there you go, Virgil.
Yeah, there you go.
Give us that inside information.
Right.
Okay, if I find out, I'll let you know.
All right.
I'll ask him tomorrow.
Sounds great. Okay, does anybody want to bring up any other issues to put on a future meeting? We're going to have one more fisheries subcommittee meeting and two more full AC meetings. All right, any member comments in general?
Yeah, Gail, this is Chuck.
Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Who is going to be meeting with the Fish and Game Commissioner?
Virgil. He's in Whitehorse at Yukon River Pale.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. He should be. I'm not sure he's aware that of the damage to the Copper River Highway right-of-way prior to O'Brien Creek that, you know, affords access for dip netters.
There's
two major, really damaging slides that happened last fall in October, and at both sites, this is just prior to the bluff of that, before you drop down O'Brien Creek, there's about a 80 to 100 foot split in the roadway. That whole outside section's ready to slide off downhill.
Woo!
And, it's... The, you know, DOT has a plan for fixing it, but they're going to have to find alternate funding for it besides the dip netter permit fund. Because of the cost, they're going to have to let a private contractor, you know, a contractor come in and do the repairs, which is going to involve digging down like 12 feet and then doing a revetment, stabilizing the whole slopes there. So,
wow.
The last thing, talking to DOT, it's possible, well, it's going to be really iffy whether there's going to be traffic, the highway vehicles getting into O'Brien Creek.
Yeah.
If Virgil happens to, maybe mention something about that. I just, I, uh, today I sent in a letter documenting all that to the Interior delegation. I'm starting to hear back from some of them already. So,
Chuck, can you share that with us, with the AC?
The letter?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could.
Yeah, that would be great. Appreciate that. That would be a big concern for all of us.
Now, thanks, Chuck. This is Al.
Yeah.
Why does DOT feel that they're not obligated to fix that without having, funding from an alternative force or alternative source? Because it is such an access to a lot of Alaskans.
I can't answer that, Al. All I know is, most of their funding probably already has been spoken for.
Yeah, I think there's some political sway on that. That's a really important resource to a lot of Alaskans, yeah. And I don't see how that any differs from, the Ricks or the Glen Allen or any other highway that would have restrictions from a landslide or an avalanche. I think this is a real ploy to, where I'm going with this is that it's a restriction and they're trying to grasp for money. And I think they already have the ability to, request additional funds because it is such an important resource to all Alaskans, especially the interior.
Chuck, this would be a good one to bring up to the Laundry House Gang Wednesday.
Sure. I brought it up, at that meeting earlier.
Are they taking it up?
No. Not that,
Yeah, I would encourage you to do it again.
Well, I encourage the Interior delegation to, liaison with the DOT commissioner on this.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
If you can send that letter to us, then at least the AC can look at it and support that, and also the Laundry House Gang.
Sure.
Yeah, that's really critical. I agree with Al completely that this is so important, especially now.
Well, the other thing, kind of the deadline for trying to find money and letting a contract, to get somebody up there to do the works.
Right.
It doesn't look like it's going to happen, before season this year or so.
Well, that could be a really critical problem.
Well, what the decision is who knows?
Yeah.
They want to use funds from the dip meters, meter fee, to build a better campground.
Yeah, good point. Right.
That was not DOT's decision. That came from your acting director of sport fish.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yep. That's where that all originated from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was some compromise in that one too.
Yeah, I was asked about that by legislator Myers, Robert Myers, and I explained to him. He said he heard that in the grapevine that some of the funds had been kind of astounded with. He didn't use that term, but I knew what he was getting at, and I explained to him about the campground thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Chuck, for being a diplomat. Yeah, that was Senator Myers.
Yeah. I couldn't remember if it's rep or senator, so I didn't. I just said legislator.
All right. Well, Bill, that's a real important point. Thank you, Chuck.
Yep.
Any other member comments? Any comments from the public? Okay, well, Our next meeting for the subcommittee is April 24th. The next meeting for the full AC is the 12th. And that is a hybrid meeting. I will be personally at that meeting, but it is also available online. So I want to thank all of you for coming, and we'll do a follow-up on, and I'll do a report on the 12th on the follow-up that we've done from today's meeting, as well as getting those proposals out. I'll work with Virgil on that as soon as he gets back. All right. Well, thank you all very, very much. Appreciate you coming tonight. And with that, have a good week.
Have a good week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gail.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gail.
Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.